Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of At the Movies with William Fletcher. As per usual, I am your host, William Fletcher, and it has been a couple of weeks. Unfortunately, I've just not had the time to record. People haven't been available, So that's why I'm not trying to stick to a stringent, like, get an episode out every week, because I don't want to put out episodes that I'm not happy with. I want to instead, if it takes like a couple of weeks to record, get an episode recorded to put out, then that's what it'll take. I don't want to just rush episodes and burn myself out, which has happened in the past before. But that's why there hasn't been any episodes in a couple of weeks. And so, yeah, I can't guarantee episodes every week, but hopefully I will try and get them out as regularly as I possibly can. And for this week's episode, I am joined by a regular contributor to this show, Mr. Harry Jobson.
How is everybody? I'm well. It's good to hear you guys are doing well.
Yes, and this week we are going to be looking at the directorial filmography of Alex Garland. I'll quickly touch on a couple things he had made before he became a director, because he had been a writer prior to this, and he has written all of his films, but he was predominantly a writer before he made Ex Machina, which we'll get to. So I just want to quickly touch on his earlier films. So he wrote 28 Days Later. Have you seen? I covered that on the show before. I like 28 Days Later. I don't know if you've seen. I don't know if we've talked. Oh, we talked about Shaun of the Dead, but I don't remember what your feelings were on zombies as like a.
I'm not a big zombie guy. Just as a concept, yeah. I feel like it's a tiny bit lazy. I think Shaun of the Dead does really well. And I think Zombieland is funny. I think comedies with zombies, because it kind of plays on the fact that zombies as a genre is just a little saturated. But I thought 28 Days Later was... I thought it was fine. I have watched it. I will be honest, I didn't sit down, pay attention the whole time, sort of watch it. It was on during a class, which sounds funny enough. And I was sort of, I'm the type of guy to float away sometimes. So I know my teacher really liked the film when he put it on in class, and it scared the respectful sugar honey iced tea out of me. I don't know, like 8.
Yeah, 28 Days Later and 28 Weeks Later, which Alex Garland is an uncredited writer on. I covered both of those films like 2 years ago. So go listen to it, basically, is what I'm saying. I covered those films a while ago now. And then Sunshine, have you seen Sunshine?
No, I haven't.
But yeah, Sunshine, I haven't seen Sunshine, unfortunately. I've heard it's a very good movie. People really like Sunshine. Never Let Me Go, have you seen that one?
No, I'm not very familiar with Alex Garland. So coming into this, it's a pretty sort of fresh ideas is what I'm getting.
Oh, well, Never Let Me Go is a film from 2010. It's a British film. It's got Carey Mulligan and Andrew Garfield. Andrew Garfield's fucking phenomenal in it, because he's like a phenomenal actor. I mean, we've talked about Andrew Garfield before, but I think you and I both agree he's a...
Yeah.
Phenomenal talent. I mean, and I think you get a lot. It's a very, like, human film. It's about sort of characters, they deal with their mortality and, like, knowing, like, oh, yeah, I'm gonna, you know, it's a very depressing film, but I think they really like it. Dread, have you seen Dread at all?
Okay, I've been around Dread. Does that make sense? Like, I've seen it in passing. Judge Dread was one that I probably have seen more of. That's the 90s one. But yeah, Dread... Yeah. I know of Dread. Dread 3D.
But anyway, Dread I have not seen, unfortunately. So I can't comment on that one personally. But I'm aware of it. I'm aware of what Judge Dread is. And I'm aware of, like, the movies that he's in.
The culture, yeah.
Yeah, I'm aware of, like, yeah, the cultural... of who Judge Dredd is, yeah. But anyway, we move on to sort of the meat and potatoes of this episode with Ex Machina. So, my whole experience with Alex Garland of his directorial films is I think they are very well crafted and made on a technical level. Like, the direction, the acting, the visuals, they're all great, but I just don't quite connect with the writing. And I've said before that I'm very much someone who responds well to great writing. I think writing is sort of one of the most important parts of a film for me. If the writing doesn't work,
yeah,
the rest of the film does not really work for me. I think Ex Machina is one of those films. I think it's a very well made film, but I just
don't... it's a victim to the script.
Yeah, and it leaves me a bit emotionally cold. Empty. I don't know. It's a bit
cold. I got the feeling that when I watched it, I was just like, okay. Like, I thought it was good, but I just felt like I was watching... Like, for example, I think Oscar Isaac, as always, does a great job. I think the performance... I don't think the performances in these films... I think, what is it? Is it Domhnall Gleeson? Yeah, Domhnall Gleeson. I think he does a really good job.
Domhnall Gleeson's an interesting actor to me. Because he's always kind of in shit rock. Like, in Star Wars, I think he's
But the vibe was just off. Like, yeah, no, I don't know. I think the whole twist of, it was actually, like, okay, spoiler alert, but you're listening to a film podcast.
Yeah, spoilers. We're going to get into the plot of this, yeah.
The whole, like, Ava being the manipulator all along, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, I mean, I liked, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like they didn't convince me enough of Oscar Isaac's Nathan being a sociopath for me for when the twist was that robot, but like her character is like actually, I guess, the villain. Not really a villain, but kind of the manipulator. I'm like, okay. It was laid out from the very beginning of the film that like, that's not a human, like, and it's learning to replicate human emotion. But I think the concept is there. I just think
the execution is lacking.
Yeah, I think the filmmaking is really well done. I love when the power goes out, the red lighting. I love that. Yeah, I feel like the script, it could have been thicker. It feels pretty bare bones. It feels like they were like, okay, here is concept, we'll storyboard it, and then we'll just work from the storyboard. Like, it didn't feel like there was,
yeah,
you know, like it, a, like,
it,
a, like,
yeah, it,
like a novel. Like, I feel like it would be a really great book if they really fleshed out a world, but
I definitely get what you mean. I think it's a film that is so close to being great, it just doesn't quite get over the hurdle, you know. It sort of is like, it's very close to being this, you know, masterwork, you know, because a lot of people like this film. Like, people fucking love Ex Machina and Annihilation. Actually, people love both of those films, and I just don't get what this film is like. I'm like, what is there meant to be? You know, like, what's the next level for this film, you know?
And, yeah, no, I understand that. And the whole... Yeah, I also felt like it doesn't feel like there is anything outside of this film in the world of the film. And I know that we live in a world of sequels. Right, and I don't think that there needs to be a sequel to Ex Machina, but I almost felt like that bloody asshole on YouTube. What's his name? Everything Wrong With, like, you know, that he does the Everything Wrong With this movie.
CinemaSins.
He points out CinemaSins, and he points out really shitty, annoying little nitpicky. Cinema Wins, great, one of my favorite content creators.
I think he
has a really great appreciation for it, but. Like, I felt like, because at the end of the film, you know, when she just sort of blends into society, I'm like, so what, is she homeless now? So, like, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking so literally. Like, it was like, how is she going to live? I think the whole, like, the twist of, oh, well, what was it? Kyoko being a robot? I'm like, yeah, everyone knew that. I watched that film and I'm like, this is the most obvious display of, oh, it's going to turn into a robot. I really do like some of the concept. I feel like the concepts are there, though. The whole him cutting his arm open to make sure he's, like, actually human. Rick and Morty did that. I didn't notice it till I rewatched it. And then when I was watching that episode of Rick, I thought about the episode of Rick and Morty. I don't know if you've seen it, but about, like, when the clones of clones of clones of clones, like, the decoys,
Am I a decoy?
He cuts his arm open to find out he's a decoy, and he's like, oh.
Yeah, I think the film, it feels like, I don't know if I think, it feels like it's trying to be so profound, and because I watched it and I was just like, yeah, that was cool, and I liked sort of the third act, and I liked this sort of nihilistic end where the Caleb and Nathan just sort of die. They just get stuck and they die. I'm like, yeah, I like that. But it's just everything beforehand where it's just kind of like, okay, that's one solid scene in a nearly 2-hour movie. You know, you need a bit more than that. And I think a lot of people, I think there are people who sort of watch things and then they love the ending so much that they're like, it colors their opinion of like the whole thing. Like you see it with TV a lot where like, an episode will end with a character like dying, and then people just rave about, oh my god, this episode was so great. And then you watch it, and it's the most like average thing ever. But then someone gets killed at the end, and you're like, oh, okay, that's why people like this, because someone dies. And I'm sure people do love all like this film as overall, but I think it sort of, in a general sense, this film to me is just sort of like, it's very okay. And I don't feel a desire to watch it again. I like this movie.
I'm not going to like willingly watch it again.
But this isn't.
I'm not going to be like, hey, I should watch.
You know, it's not a film where I'm like, oh, I want to watch that again to see what it was like, you know? And it's not a bad film, I don't think, but it's just sort of like, there's nothing for me to be like, I want to watch that again. There's nothing about it where I'm like, I want to watch that movie again, where it's like, oh, I can't wait to, you know, it's like, if I watch it, I won't dislike watching it, but I don't have a real desire to be like, this is a film I can't wait to watch again. It's just sort of like, if it's like on TV or someone just wants to watch it with me, I'll do it, but I'm not like fully like, yeah, you know.
I get where you're coming from.
I just want to say, visually, I think like the visual effects are very like the way like Ava, the sort of the visual effects on her to make her look like, I think, are very, very well realized.
Yeah.
I think it's a very remarkable looking movie from a visual perspective. I think that goes for
It's incredibly grounded for such a concept.
Yeah, like it's like, such a...
And that's due to the visual effects.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm just looking at images of the movie and it's like, it looks real. Like, it looks seamless, like... And I remember this film won the Oscar that year for best visual effects, which was a, you know, big drop to some people because it was competing against The Force Awakens and Mad Max Fury Road. And people were like, well, it's going to go to one of like the big, obvious, like blockbuster movies, you know, which the Oscars often go for that, you know, like recently that was Godzilla. You know, they go for Star Wars, or they go for all these different categories before. But I think it's not an undeserved win. I think it's a very impressive looking movie from a visual perspective. Although, of course, the Martian was nominated that year as well. I forgot The Martian came out that year. But you know, like The Martian's also a bigger movie. You know, it's a space movie for a lot of it, you know, and like. But I think it's nice when the Oscars sort of award sort of smaller movies, movies that have got like the visual effects are a bit more subtle rather than big like sci-fi epic. Because this is, I mean, this is a sci-fi film, but it's not like a sci-fi epic like your Star Wars or a Marvel movie or anything like that. It's a real like, this is a very grounded movie, but the visual effects are very, it's not big stuff. It's just blending like reality with, you know, like sort of normal people with visual effects. And it was also nominated for Best Original Screenplay as well at the Oscars that year as well, which is fine. I don't think it's particularly, what was it even nominated that year? Bridge of Spies, Spotlight, Inside Out, Straight Outta Compton.
I think that, especially with Ex Machina, I don't know. I feel like I say it wrong every time. Ex Machina, Ex Machina, Ex Machinima. Not Machinima.
I hear many things and I'm like, I don't, what is the pronunciation of this? Where I'm like, for so many years, I'm like, this is the pronunciation of a word. And then I hear someone else say it. I'm like, well, fuck, is that how I meant to say it?
I think it is a great film. I think it has great scenes as well. But I just think as a film overall, like as a narrative, it's weak. But
yeah,
it's not to say that there aren't individual greatnesses within the film, like the visual effects, like some of the scenes, like the Oscar Isaac dance scene, I love. But I also, there's one shot in the film where Caleb and Oscar Isaac's Nathan are going up an elevator. And if you squint your eyes, it's the shot from The Hangover and Oscar Isaac is Zach Galifianakis. It's like same lighting, same sort of angle. It's insane. They just straight up ripped off, you know, The Hangover. But I'm fine with that. But I don't know. I think overall I'd give it like a 6, 7.
Yeah.
That's for like the actual filmmaking of it.
Yeah, but I give it a 7, and that's very much on the basis of it's a very well-made movie, and I really like a lot of the ideas it's dealing with. It's just the writing lets it down a bit. So I give it a 7. I do like it. It's not a bad movie. But then we move on to Annihilation, which I watched for the first time today, and I really liked it, actually. I think it's of the three films we're going to be mainly talking about. I liked it quite a bit.
I did too.
The writing let it down a bit. The writing lets it down a bit. I want to make that clear first. I don't love it. Like, I sound like I'm going to be more positive on it. I think this one just, like, I think this is a much better movie. Like, from a writing perspective, I think it's a, first of all, there's some really great scenes, there's like some scenes that I'm like, oh, that's actually really good. I think in a general sense, I think this is the best of the three of his directorial films. I think it's a very well directed movie. I think the script is much better than Ex Machina. The visuals, I mean, Jesus Christ, I was watching
all the shimmer and some of the organisms visuals and stuff.
Yeah, gorgeous. It's like, man. And this film, like, just looking at the budget, this film had a budget of $40 to $55 million. Like, that's not a lot of money for, like,
this, like, good looking of a film. Yeah.
This movie should, like, and you look at, like, let's, we talk about this. Recent DC and Marvel films, some of them, they cost a lot more than that.
$300 million. Like,
they don't,
it's insane,
look that good. Like, if I was to look at The Flash, for example.
Oh, that film's fugly.
That film cost $200 to $220 million. And now, of course, I don't know what like the budget was for the visual effects, because it was delayed significantly. It took them ages to release it. So I of course I don't know, but it's sort of just like, well, you know, that's still a lot of money though. That's like $200 million for visual effects. That, even if I don't hate that movie, but the visual effects, some of them are really ropey. But I think Annihilation is a beautiful looking movie. From the visual effects, I think it's shot very nicely as well. Like, I'm not like the most like biggest cinematography guy. You know, I appreciate good cinematography, but it's not like, that's not a thing that I'm always like, oh, this is what I'm going to respond to. But It's a very well-directed movie. I thought the performances, I actually thought they were all very, very good. Very good acting. I think Natalie Portman is a very good actor, just in general. I think she's great.
See, that's my beef. See, I think this film is great, but... And we'll get into a couple of my beefs when it's my time. But just quickly, every time I watch Natalie Portman, I can't see anyone else but Natalie Portman. Like, I struggle to get into the film. I don't know what it is specifically about her. She just has, like, a very distinctive face.
Yeah.
To the point where it's like, I find it hard to dive into the character. Because all I can think about is, like, Thor or...
You don't lose yourself in the role.
Yeah, I understand that she is great. She is a great actress, because I do eventually. But for the first 30 minutes of each film Natalie Portman's in, I'm like, oh, it's Natalie Portman. I don't think, oh, it's, you know, X. Or I don't think it's, oh, it's the biologist. I think, oh, that's Natalie Portman. And it's only her. I can't explain it. Oh, Samuel L. Jackson. Samuel L. Jackson to me is Samuel L. Jackson in every film he's in. Yeah, but that's kind of true.
I think Natalie Portman's a very good actor. I think she's great, but I think she needs to be in the right role. Like, she's a very good actor, but like, look at her in the MCU. She's not very good in those first in the Thor movies. Like, she's not very good in that role. You know, and in Star Wars. Star Wars, I can give her a bit of leeway because she was younger then. She wasn't, like, the most established. I think Natalie Portman's very great in general, and I really liked her in this. It was interesting watching this because it's a predominantly female-led cast.
Yeah, but it, you don't think about that until, like, you look at it and then you're like, ah. This is in a great comparison to the last episode we recorded together. Because one film, like, this is how you do a female cast.
I was thinking about what we last recorded, and it was Ghostbusters. And I was like, guys, just before you said, I was like, was it Ghostbusters? And then you said, oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it's a really great, and I think all the sort of characters, they all feel very well defined.
I have heard, anyway, I've read a few things on Annihilation after I watched the film. Apparently, the book keeps there's no name for the characters. It's the biologist, it's the psychiatrist, like the psychologist or whatever, which I think you can get away with a novel, because novels, you sort of get lost in the names, whereas, like, characters, you attach to a face in a film, it's 2 hours long. So sort of like Cass, Anya, all of them people, Kane, I think Kane might have a name, but like apparently most of the grievances I had with the film, I think, more or less not in the novel, like the original book. Some of the grievances I had, for example, is I felt like a lot of the shimmer, for example, I feel like it focuses too much on what it does to humans in the film, whereas in the novel it focuses a lot more on how it focuses a lot more on how it more so assimilates rather than like manipulates, and I feel like in this film it's a bit more manipulative.
I also think, to be fair, with a book, you can do a bit more, like, because this is a 2-hour film, you know, you do have to cut things down to a degree. So I can excuse that to a degree of being like, well, you know, but I get what you mean. I think there's a bit more they could have done with this film. And I kind of wish we had gotten to see a bit more, like, different creatures. Like, I feel like there's a few scenes where there's different creatures, but we don't see. I would have liked a little bit more of that. There's the crocodile scene. There's
the crocodile with shark teeth. The bear that takes Kaz's voice, which is
probably my favorite scene in the whole movie. That's probably my favorite scene in the whole movie, where, like, we hear her voice and I'm like, okay, and then she runs off. And then the bear just, we see the shadow, I'm like, oh, what is this? And, like, it opens its mouth and her voice comes through, I'm like, oh, that is fucking so like unnerving, but I kind of really loved it. I was like,
that was well done.
Yeah, and like this isn't, I wouldn't classify it as a horror film, but I'd say this is scarier than like 90% of horror films, certainly modern day. I feel like horror films right now have kind of forgotten like how to be scared, like how to be scary.
Oh my god, please. I don't watch horror films, but I beg to see a horror film come out that isn't religious. It's always the Nun, The Conjuring, The Covenant, The First World, like. I tend to agree, even though I'm not a fan of horror and will actively avoid watching it. Like, I just won't. Like, yeah. It takes a lot for me to... And I didn't really think about that coming into this film or when I first watched it. This film is heavily... The way you feel about it is heavily based on your interpretation of the ending. And Alex Garland loves a good... Ooh, look at this ending sort of film. I feel like I have a certain feeling because the way I interpret the ending of the film. Whereas my feeling is a lot more like triumphant. I know a lot of, I've read a lot of reviews that have opposite feelings based on their interpretation. And the ending is left open to interpretation, but...
Yeah. Which I think... In this case, it works. I think there's a lot of films with sort of open-ended or ambiguous endings. And a lot of the time, for me, it feels like, oh, they just couldn't think of an ending. So they were just like, fuck it, we'll just do this. And that's the ending. And it's like a bit of a cop-out. Like, well, we couldn't think of anything, so we'll just end ambiguously. And I think this film actually does a really good job of... It's an open-ended ending. But...
Yeah,
it doesn't feel like it feels like that was the point, like it was meant to be like that. It wasn't just like they're like, oh, how do we end this? And then they just were like, well, let's do this thing that is like the, you know, simple, the lazy, you know, the simple, like, oh, we couldn't think of an ending here, we'll just say this, we'll just leave open ended because couldn't think of it. I think it actually, and it's really, and I think it, yeah, works really well. I think the film, just in general, I think the film does a really good job at being, it's a very well-made movie, and Alex Garland, I think, is a very good director. He has recently, like, I don't know, like, yesterday, the day before, he's announced that he's, like, quitting filmmaking, or I think, like, directing.
Okay.
Because he's basically said he doesn't enjoy doing it, and he's sort of, like, I want to find, like, the article that it said it, but he's basically, saying, I'm not going to direct. Basically, he's fallen out of love with it, with filmmaking sort of just in general, and I don't think that's unfair, and so I'm just reading a quote here. He said, it isn't about the lack of funding for his projects, but rather from the fact that you're asking people to trust something that, on the face of it, doesn't look very trustworthy. And he is co-directing an upcoming film called Warfare, but he is co-directing, so I think it's not the same thing. And I read some things about Annihilation that initially there were test screenings of the film, and the film did not do well at test screenings. And so one of the finances basically said, was concerned that the film was too intellectual and too complicated, and he wanted the ending to be changed and to make Portman's character more sympathetic, because throughout the movie you see sort of scenes of her sleeping with another man who's not her husband. But one of the producers sided with Alex Garland and said, nope, we are not going to, and we're not changing this film, we're not altering the film, we are keeping this film as it is. Which I respect, actually. I really respect
when appreciate that
the ground, and they're like, nope, this is what we're doing, and we're sticking with it. We're not changing it to appease an audience. So this,
remember when Sam Raimi tried to do that and ended up getting fucking fired?
But yeah, so basically, they kept the ending, which I respect wholeheartedly, and they struck a deal with Netflix, which basically meant Netflix would distribute the film basically around the world, but the film wouldn't go into cinemas in America, Canada, and China. Now, Alex Garland has said that he was disappointed with that decision, because he said we made the film for the cinema. And I can imagine this film would look phenomenal in a cinema. Like, it'd be
it's a
visually beautiful film. Like, I'm not someone who, like, is like, I need the visuals to be, like, the greatest things ever or anything. But, like, when you see good visuals, like, when I see good visuals, I'm like, okay, I do... Like, I do love good visuals, but I'm not like when we saw Spider-Verse together, it's just like, that is a fucking amazing looking movie in the cinema, you know, and I don't think watching it at home
would
be the same thing. And I think this film would sort of be on that same level of, like, if you watch this in a cinema, you'd just be like, fucking, looking at this, like, this is an incredible looking movie, because, like, the designs of I mean, there's the bear,
which
I think looks really great. There's that, I forget what they were, but there's this bit where Natalie Portman, she sees these two, like, deer-looking animals or whatever it is.
Oh, the deer copying the other deer, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like, that's really cool. I really like that. It's shot very nicely. It's, the score is really, like, really quite unnerving score. Like, it does create a sort of foreboding dread. And I didn't really think this was going to be a horror film when I went into it. But watching it, I'm like, oh, there is, like, some actual horror. Like, it is, like, a quite unnerving film to watch from, like, a... Like, it's really good. And I think when characters start getting killed off, they start dying, it's like... You do feel a real sense of foreboding. But I also think that the film as a whole, it... I don't know, maybe it's a... I didn't quite love it, though. Like, I do really like it, but I'm not like, this is, like, the greatest film ever or anything, and it... I don't know, maybe it could be trimmed down just, like, a little bit, and I think it would be, like, even better. But I think this is a film I can see myself going back... Like, this, comparatively to Ex Machina, I could watch... I might just be one day being like, I want to watch that film, because I really... Because it's, yeah, maybe I'll appreciate it more on a rewatch. But I at current time, I give it a very solid 7 out of 10. I think it's a really damn near masterfully crafted film. Like, it's a really great technical effort. And performance is everything. It's just the script isn't... I don't love the script.
I am getting into sort of my piece on the film.
Mm-hmm.
I really did enjoy it. I think, again, and echoing a lot of what you've been saying, it is gorgeous. I think the visual effects are stunning as well. There are a few things. So, all right, I'll just jump into the end. So the ending of the film is quite ambiguous. It sort of left open to interpretation. It's like she now knows that her... Oscar Isaac Kane. She now knows that her Kane is a clone. She's cheated on him anyway. And he knew that she cheated, which is one of the main reasons that he was tempted to even go into the tumor to begin with. And that's that whole little subplot. When she, like, hugs him and her eyes go glowing, everyone's like, that means that she's the clone. No. I tend to believe the ending of the film was, one, her eyes are glowing because she had mutated cells at the beginning of the film. Like, when she first enters the shimmer, that glows anyway. So her eyes will glow. Two, I like to believe that we did see, like, and the whole reason I like to believe that we did see her clone self-destruct or annihilate herself and the entire fucking shimmer, quote unquote, is because... The core message of the film is that she's using not humanity's strengths to prevail, but rather humanity's weakness, because it mimics it mimics both the strengths of these characters, the voices, I mean, the bear, but the whole thing is that it assimilates and it mimics. So it both mimics the weaknesses of the human race. So her... realizing that and getting the thing to blow itself up by teaching it how, I thought was, one, really clever. It's a really clever way to end the film. Two, or to, like, end the core conflict of the film. But it's, like, a very much a, like, the human race has prevailed sort of ending. It's quite hopeful. It's quite nice. It's quite happy. That's the one I like to live with, especially coming out of a film that is quite dark. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people tend to believe that whether or not blowing up the shimmer actually made it cover the entire world and thus everyone is clones and that's where her eyes are glowing. That's, again, up to interpretation. But I don't know. I also think the dinky little basement, like, I don't know. In the book, the bottom of the tunnel, like the bottom of the lighthouse is described as almost an inverse of the lighthouse, but underground, which I think is really cool. And again, this is all I've read from reviews and I watched a couple of essays, but I like to think that, I don't know, obviously more could have been, give them $100 million on top of their budget. I think this goes down as one of the great films. I just think their budget held them back in regards to what they could do physically, which, and they still did some amazing things physically, don't get me wrong. And I also think that it could have been a bit plumper again. And it's the same, whether or not it's Garland's writing, which I'm not one to sit here and criticize because I'm not a writer. But I do think that he has a tendency, or well, at least in the films that we've covered today, has a tendency to have quite a bare bones concept and script. Especially coming off what seems to be such a strong novel, I just wish there could have been more. And again, that's not saying that there wasn't a lot, but I feel like there could have been more. My interpretation of the ending is quite hopeful for quite such a dark film, and I can't get past Natalie Portman looking like Natalie Portman. Okay, so it's better than Ex Machina, but I don't think it's, like, phenomenal. So, like, I want to give it a 7.5.
But, yeah, so we move on to his TV show he did called Devs. I watched the first episode of it. I legitimately planned to watch it all for the purposes of this. I just did not get the time to. So I've seen the first episode. Did you watch any? I feel like you mentioned you'd seen, like, a bit of it, I think you said, Harry.
I did not really get a chance. I didn't get enough to like even really talk on it, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, I only watched the first episode. I thought the first episode was really great, but I haven't seen all of it, so I can't really talk on it. But the first episode of Devs is better than anything else he's directed. I'll say that much. I think it's a very well made episode of TV. But yeah, we haven't seen it, so we can't talk about it, sorry. And then rounding off the discussion, main discussion is Men, which is his last film he released, his most divisive film. You were saying that you hadn't, I don't know if you said this at the beginning of this or if it was just before we started, but you had, you started watching it, didn't you?
I started the film, fell asleep, had a nightmare. Well, not really a nightmare. It was just like an uncomfortable dream. Like, I didn't really get in. Like, no, unfortunately, I didn't even really get the setup for it, like at all.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen it, so I'll touch on it briefly. But this is a very divisive movie. This is the most nihilistically brutal film. It's a very just unpleasant film to watch. Like, I'll say that, like, it's not pleasant to watch. Like, it's really quite, it almost reaches the level of like torture porn almost. Like, it's really like, did we need this? Like, it's almost reaching the level of like, what does this mean? Are you just doing
this? I've heard that there are some really like disgusting, like not disgusting, but just uncomfortable, grotesque.
Yeah, it's a very uncomfortable movie at times. I mean, you don't really know what it's about then as a film.
I know what it's about because I read a synopsis, not like an overview, but like a synopsis for most films.
Yeah, the basic.
I know that it's a young woman. She goes on a solo vacation to the countryside after her husband passes away. And then like and then it turns into like this gross shit.
Yeah. There's all these men in this village played by Rory Kinnear. Like, he plays every character in it, all the male characters. which is very odd. I didn't really know what the film was initially, so I was watching, like, oh, it's just the same guy playing every role, and I just remember thinking it's a very well-made movie. I think that the whole, like, I think the entire sort of idea of, like, I think the setting works really well. For some reason, I really get a lot out of films that take place sort of in the British countryside. Like, there's sort of, especially horror films, I really get a lot out of films that take place in sort of small sort of neighborhoods, like sort of villages. But, like, there's, like, I can sort of walk from my house. There's, like, a whole, like, a lineup of shops. There's, like, a fish and chip shop. There's, like, a grocer. And I don't know, something about that I feel like with horror, I prefer horror that's sort of small scale and takes place in sort of just like a very, sort of recluse, very sort of, there's just like a vibe.
Well, I understand, it's a contained environment that's like quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, quite quiet.
Yeah, exactly. And I think British horror, I think, really delves into that. I think the score is really nice. Jessie Buckley, who is the lead in it, I think she's a really great actress. I think she's fantastic in this part. Rory Kinnear, I thought, was all right. I thought he was... I don't think he's, like, an amazing actor or anything. And there's these weird bits where he plays, like, children, where they, like, superimpose his face onto, like, the body of a child, and it looks...
I hate that.
It looks very weird, and I'm like, I don't think I like that. Like, I don't entirely know how to feel about it, but I'm like, I don't think I like that. Because it just doesn't look particularly good either, which is the problem. If it looked better, it would be fine, but it does look a bit dogshit. And I'm like, what is this? I don't love this that much. I don't know what the film is. It's very fitting with Ex Machina and Annihilation. There's some great ideas at play here that I really like. It just doesn't come together in the script. Like, that's just the same point we've been hitting on for this entire episode, but it's the same thing. It's so close to being great. Like, because everything's there. It creates a great thought. There's a great vibe to it. It's really unnerving. All this great shit, and it just doesn't completely come together as a narrative. And that's the unfortunate thing. His films just don't connect. I can't connect to them on an emotional level. But I think the hate is a bit unjustified. I think there are definitely criticisms to make of it. Like, I don't really know what it's trying to say. But I think as a general film, I think it's a very well-made movie. Yeah, I really like it, though. I not really like it. I like it. I really like Annihilation, and I like this and Ex Machina about the same. So I give this one a 7 out of 10 as well. I do like it. I just don't fully... It just doesn't come together as a cohesive, complete whole.
No, I agree. I don't agree on that film, but I agree in the sentiment that I feel like we just keep echoing that his films are a bit, we'll say, skinny.
Yeah, we're tied us into the release of Civil War, which is Alex Garland's new film, so we'll talk about this in the Review of the Year episode. Do you know anything about this film? Like, have you read it?
No, I am keen. I have seen, like, it on, like, for example, when we're looking at event cinemas, shout out, obviously and when you go past a cinema, it's like the next film coming out, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's basically it.
Yeah, I mean, the cast has got Kirsten Dunst, it's got Wagner Moura, I think is how you pronounce his name. He was the voice of the wolf in Puss in Boots 2. So that's why I'm aware of who he is. And I thought he was fantastic in that, by the way. I thought he gave a great performance there. Nick Offerman is in it as the President of the United States.
You've love Nick Offerman! How can you not love Jesse Nick Offerman?
Yeah, you can't not love Nick Offerman. He's fantastic. So this film has come out. It premiered at South by Southwest. It's currently sitting at a 92% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's generally being seen as a better film than Men was. Initially, it was reported that it was going to be 3 hours long, and I was like, fuck that. But it's 1 hour 49 minutes, which is a much more...
That's a considerable cut.
Yeah, that's a much more agreeable length of a film. I don't really know a whole lot on it. I was wondering if they were going to release it near the release of, because this is an election year in the States, so I was wondering, maybe are they going to release this around October, November for the 2024 election? And I'm like, that'd be an interesting decision, but they haven't. They're releasing it. By the time this episode comes out, it'll be out this week. So we're going to see it. We're going to talk about it for the review of the year episode. I'm interested in seeing it because it could end up being really great. I'm not sure yet, though. I don't know what to make of it yet. I haven't really seen much of it. But yeah, that's pretty much all I've got to say on this week's episode. Do you have any final things you want to say before we wrap
up? Not really. Not particularly, no. Just, can we do some more comedies, please? Something that I can laugh to.
Maybe we will. I'll have to look at some comedies I like. Or maybe comedies that you like that I haven't seen that I'd like to watch. So thank you all for joining us for this week's episode. Harry, thank you for having me. Harry keeps doing these episodes. Because I like having Harry on. Harry likes doing them. Thank you for listening. And the next couple weeks, actually, there's nothing really planned for those next couple weeks. Nothing coming out, really. So we're just probably going to do some random shit that we want to talk about. So there's going to be some things coming out that don't have sequels or anything coming out that we can tie into. So, 2 weeks of just whatever we want. So... I'm looking forward to that because we can just choose what we want to do. Thank you all for listening to this week's episode, and I'll see you all in the next one. Goodbye.